hands in Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunus. Other parts of Gaza were also targeted by the regime's military. In one of the bloodiest attacks, around a dozen civilians were killed and many others injured after Israeli air and artillery strikes targeted the At-Tufa neighborhood in Gaza City. 8 civilians, including women and children, were killed in an Israeli attack on a home in the central city of Deir al-Balah. Israeli strikes also claimed several lives in Jabalia, northern Gaza. The Israeli genocide has killed nearly 50,700 Palestinians so far, leaving over 115,300 injured. Well, you're watching live footage from northern Gaza right now, which is under heavy bombardment by the Israeli airstrikes. At least 9 have been killed in airstrikes across Gaza Strip as Israel intensifies its aggressions. In recent days, we have been facing a huge amounts of attacks with Israeli forces. Aside from the killing of 15 medical workers, which was denied at first by the Israeli regime until there were evidence and video evidence that showed that the trucks and the cars had their alarms on, and they have been killed intentionally and very brutally, some of them even handcuffed. So once again, you're watching live footage from northern Gaza, which is, you can see the plume of smoke in the sky, the beautiful skyline of Gaza. Right now it's absolutely invisible because of all the smoke as a result of the heavy bombardment by Israeli airstrikes and Israeli warplanes. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Masabeh joined us earlier with the latest updates on Israel's attacks across the blockaded territory. Let's take a listen.
Following the barrage of the Palestinian rockets, which was launched from Gaza Strip into the depth of the Palestinian occupied territories, basically Ascalon and Ashdod cities, and according to Al-Qassam Brigades, that they claim the responsibility of launching this barrage of rockets, and according to them, it came as a response to the ongoing and non-stop Israeli massacres and atrocities committed against the Palestinian civilians in Gaza Strip. And as you know, we're talking about 10 rockets were launched from the central area of Gaza Strip, targeting those areas in Ascalon and Ashdod cities. And according to the Israeli sources, that five rockets out of the 10 were intercepted by the Israeli Iron Dome rockets, and this means clearly that the other ones landed and hit and impacted their targets there. And according to the Israeli sources, that 27 injuries were handled by the hospitals, and they have been given the medical care there. So this is the largest barrage to be fired from Gaza Strip since the resumption of this genocidal war till this moment, and it serves another testament that all these operations and the ongoing and non-stop Israeli genocidal attacks are still, as you know, futile to stop the Palestinian resistance. And
Palestinian officials in Gaza say Israeli forces have committed, quote, a shocking crime of genocide against children over the past 20 days. Gaza's government media office said nearly 500 Palestinian children have been killed in Israel's barbaric attack since the regime resumed its genocidal war on the territory. It added that the entire families are being wiped out and childhoods is buried under the rubble of homes. The media office strongly condemned Israel's systematic and deliberate policy of killing Palestinian children in Gaza. It held the regime, the US and the Western allies complicit in the genocide and fully responsible for the continued massacres targeting children in Gaza. The office also condemned a global inaction in the face of Israeli crimes. It said the continued shameful international silence and failure to hold Israel accountable clearly proves complicity in a genocide that is taking place in full view of the world. The office also urged the international community, human rights organizations, and international courts to take immediate action to halt Israel's crimes against children and civilians in Gaza. Political analyst Wilmer Leon says the Israeli genocide against children in the besieged Gaza Strip goes unreported in the Western media.
Internationally, it goes unreported, especially in the West. It's going unreported. I've had the news on throughout the day, throughout the entire weekend. That's not been discussed here in terms of Western press. And in fact, they had here in the United States the hands-off protests over the weekend targeting a lot of the policies from the Trump administration, and the issue of Gaza, the issue of genocide, the issue of America supporting genocide was not at the top of the list. When you listen to Senator Cory Booker with his 25-hour historic speech from last Tuesday, he did not raise the issue in a 25-hour genocide. The words genocide never came through his lips. So it happens simply because it is allowed to happen. And one of the major reasons that it is allowed to happen is that the Palestinians have been dehumanized to such a point that hardly anybody cares.
The Hamas resistance movement has launched a retaliatory operation against the occupied Palestinian territories in response to Israel's renewed genocide in Gaza. Hamas's military wing Al-Qassam Brigade said several rockets were fired at the occupied city of Ashdod. It added that the operation was in response to the crimes committed by Israeli forces against Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip. The rocket attack caused sirens sound in the occupied cities of Ashdod and Ashkelon. The Israeli military confirmed the attack, saying approximately 10 projectiles were fired from Gaza into the occupied territories within a few minutes. It claimed that most of the rockets were intercepted. However, videos posted online clearly show that Hamas rockets reached the occupied lands, causing damage to settlers' cars and homes. There have been no reports on possible casualties so far. Israeli forces have intensified their incursions into the occupied West Bank, including Ramallah. Meanwhile, Palestinians have organized a general strike in response to Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. We are now joined by our correspondent, Naka Hamed, for more details on the latest developments. Naka, very good to have you on the program. Please tell us and tell our viewers what is the latest situation in the West Bank.
Thank you, Behman. Yes, of course, the situation here in the West Bank, the strike, the general strike that has all of the life aspects, including in the West Bank, has started. And when we are saying the West Bank, this also includes occupied Al-Quds, have started since the hours of the morning. No economical situations, educational, health, everything over here has been closed to send a clear message to oppose what's happening in the Palestinian territories in general, and specifically to Gaza Strip. What's happening to Gaza Strip? The unprecedented aggression, the crimes that are being committed, and some countries of the world is standing over there and watching what's happening, especially for the last months, what's happening in Gaza. Not to mention 15 more months of relentless genocide over here in the occupied West Bank. All of the cities until now, we are receiving footage and we are receiving news from all of the cities that they are complied with the with this general strike, and many other countries will be joining this strike to make it an international strike to send a strong message to the world that it is time to step in and to stop what's happening. For the atrocities, what's happening in Gaza and in the West Bank. Through hours of the night, the IOF raided the entire Ramallah pavilion. The most of the refugee camps over here intensified attacks upon Al-Jalazon camp, Al-Amari camp, and to the north of the occupied Al-Quds, Qalandia and Shafat also were raided. And until minutes ago, the IOF started withdrawing from Ramallah and from those refugee camps, performing detainment operations, arresting many Palestinians, terrorizing families, and of course making incursions towards homes and houses, demolishing and destroying houses and properties. So this raid upon Ramallah was actually very intensive. We are saying that there has been systematic raids. Of course, every day there is a raid, raids for the IOF. But this raid was actually marked very intensive towards Al-Jalazon and Al-Am'ari as large amounts of military vehicles and soldiers raided Ramallah and its provenance. Of course, this comes along many other raids towards throughout the West Bank in the hours of the night. We are only talking about the last 12 hours and that the IOF has raided Al-Khalil to the area, to the south of Al-Khalil, to the area of Yatta, Dura, and to the area of As-Samour. Also over here in Ramallah, another raid was done towards Ariha. Another raid was done in Nablus, and of course the military operation is still going on and actually intensifying, unfortunately, in the northern part of the West Bank, in Jenin and in Tul Kerem. In Tul Kerem, the situation throughout the night was really intensive, and as the IOF continued to be working inside the Nur Shams refugee camp, and the surrounding, what is new is that the IOF is expanding the area that they are making incursions to. They are destroying and they are seizing homes to make it military outposts to the surrounding areas of these refugee camps. Another headline over here was actually from the hours of the morning, and it was quite alarming that the Palestinian Awqaf has issued a red flag, let's call it this way, as for a dangerous movement that has been done this morning. The occupation forces have put locks and closed all of the holes that are related to the Palestinian Awqaf in Al-Ibrahimi Mosque in Al-Khalil, and banned the employees of the Palestinian Awqaf to go and to open these holes and these areas that are related directly to the Palestinian Awqaf, which marks a very alarming movement towards expelling the Palestinian Awqaf from Al-Ibrahimi Mosque, as it is already a very subjected to many attacks and incursions by the Israeli settlers area inside Al-Khalil. One last thing to say is that today Intourbo Saaya will bid farewell to the Palestinian child Omar Saade, who was shot yesterday at the evening, a 14 years old child. Today they will bid him to his final rest.
Thank you, Nakha, for the update. That was Nakha Hamad, our correspondent in Ramallah. Various areas in Yemen continue to be targeted by American warplanes as the United States presses ahead with its aggression against the Arab country. According to Yemeni media, the country's capital city of Sana'a was the focal point of fresh U.S. attacks. At least three airstrikes targeted Jabal al-Aswad area in Sana'a governorate. The attacks left four civilians dead and over two dozen wounded, including 11 women and a child. American warplanes also launched four airstrikes on Kamaran Island in the governorate of Hodeidah in western Yemen. The northwestern Sada governorate was rocked with three strikes, while several air raids hit Hadja governorate, Abs district. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israeli operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Most of the U.S.'s attacks target civilian buildings, causing fatalities and injuries among civilian population. The fallout continues after a recent airstrike in Yemen's Al-Hudaydah province. U.S.'s President Donald Trump claims the strike targeted military leaders involved in naval operations, but Yemeni officials tell a very different story. Abdul Latif al-Bashali reports from Sana'a.
U.S. President Donald Trump released a video claiming success in targeting what he described as a meeting of higher-ranking military officials. According to Trump, those struck were allegedly coordinating upcoming naval operations, a move he hailed as a strategic victory.
It's well known that part of Yemeni customs and traditions is for people to gather on the first day of Eid to celebrate. The enemy exploited this and targeted the gathering, while the head of the devil, Trump, claimed it was a military meeting. The Yemeni army remains in its military barracks, safeguarding its equipment, and was not affected by this strike, which clearly targeted civilians.
Yemeni military sources quickly refuted those claims, asserting that the airstrike did not hit any military targets. Instead, they say it struck a civilian gathering during Eid celebrations in Al Hudaydah, one of many such peaceful events happening across the country. The sources stressed that none of the victims had any connection to naval or military activity.
An enemy committed a crime by bombing unarmed, innocent civilians after its failure and inability to confront the Yemeni armed forces, achieving nothing but the targeting of civilians and Yemen's infrastructure. There is pressure on the U.S. administration, and that's what pushed Trump to mislead the American people by claiming he targeted Houthi leaders, when in reality, our military leadership is on the front lines and under the protection of God Almighty.
The same sources went on to describe the strike as part of the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. They argued that the attack, which resulted in dozens of deaths and injuries, highlights what they view as the moral and strategic failure of the U.S. administration.
Despite the destruction and loss, the people of Yemen continue to show remarkable resilience, even as airstrikes claim innocent lives. Communities gather, mourn, and rebuild, refusing to let war define their future. Abdullah Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
And that is a wrap for this hour's World News. Thank you so much for staying with us.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be
averse.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough. Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
In the limelight. The United States' interest in Greenland is a microcosm of its broader Arctic strategy. a bid to secure economic interests, project power under the pretext of national security, and counter the growing influence of rival powers in this strategically vital region. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Euronews has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. President Donald Trump has dramatically stepped up efforts to seize control of Greenland by dispatching Vice President J.B. Vance, an Ohio native, to visit the mineral-rich, semi-autonomous territory of Denmark, which the United States has eyed for over 150 years. Addressing U.S. troops at Pituffik Space Base on Greenland's northwestern coast on Friday, 28th of March, J.D. Vance delivered Trump's message unequivocally. He made it clear that the American president's ultimate goal is to claim Greenland for the United States by using force if necessary. J.D. Vance said, "We do not believe that military force will ever be necessary, not so much to sound reassuring as to subtly warn that military action could in fact be an option. This would not be the first time for the United States to send troops to seize Greenland. During the Second World War, the U.S. occupied the island after Germany captured Denmark. In 1949, Washington relinquished its claim on Greenland after Denmark joined the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. While at the U.S. military base, Vice President J.D. Vance took aim at Denmark, a longtime NATO ally, accusing the Nordic Kingdom of failing to adequately protect the island's security. Vance said, "Our message to Denmark is very simple. You have not done a good job by the people of Greenland. You have underinvested in the people of Greenland, and you have underinvested in the security architecture of this incredibly beautiful landmass filled with incredible people. That has to change." J.D. Vance claimed Greenland would be better off partnering with the United States. The rebuke of a long-standing ally came shortly after Greenland formed a broad-based coalition government that excludes hardliners advocating swift independence from Denmark. Greenland was a colony of Denmark from 1721 until 1953, when it became a formal territory under the Danish constitution. In 2009, the Arctic island gained broad self-governing autonomy, including the right to declare independence through a referendum. A majority of Greenland's 57,000 inhabitants are in favor of independence, but many fear that breaking away from Denmark too soon could expose the island to a new colonial master, the United States of America. Donald Trump is not the first American president to eye Greenland. The idea of acquiring the world's largest island has surfaced multiple times in U.S. history, with notable internal discussions occurring in 1867, 1910, 1946, 1955, and most recently under Donald Trump in 2019 and 2025. Straddling the Arctic Circle between the United States, Russia, and Europe, Greenland holds a unique geopolitical advantage that has drawn Washington's interest for over a century and a half. Donald Trump first made waves with his offer to buy Greenland during his first term in office, but he has taken his desire to own the island to a whole new level since returning to the White House for a second term. Donald Trump said in his congressional address in March, "I think we're going to get it," adding, "one way or the other, we're going to get it." The United States' interest in Greenland is a microcosm of its broader Arctic strategy. A bid to secure economic interests, project power under the pretext of national security, and counter the growing influence of rival powers in this strategically vital region. With tensions already running high, the timing of J.D. Vance's visit to Greenland, just weeks after Greenland's parliamentary elections, has ruffled feathers in both Greenland and Denmark. Relations between Greenland and Denmark have long been strained, as many Greenlanders continue to harbour grievances over colonial-era mistreatment. However, Donald Trump's aggressive push for Greenland has spurred Denmark to improve its ties with a semi-autonomous Arctic island. Before J.D. Vance's arrival, Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen congratulated Greenland's new Prime Minister Jens Frederik Nielsen and his incoming government. She said, "I look forward to close cooperation in an unnecessarily conflict-filled time." Donald Trump sees Greenland, whose capital, Newark, is closer to New York than to Copenhagen, as a key asset for United States national security. He has frequently threatened to seize the island through a financial transaction or military force since his return to the Oval Office. The New Republic website has also covered the same story. How does Greenland factor into United States' national security calculations? The Arctic island lies along the shortest route from Europe to North America, making it critical to the U.S. ballistic missile warning system. The United States already has a significant military presence in Greenland through the Pituffik Space Base, which supports missile warning and space surveillance operations for NATO. During the Cold War era, the base served as an early warning post for potential Soviet missile strikes on Europe. Today, it offers a uniquely strategic location for air and submarine surveillance. The United States has made it clear that it wants to expand its military presence on Greenland, with plans to install radars to monitor the waters connecting Greenland, Iceland, and Britain, a gateway frequently traversed by Russian naval ships and nuclear submarines. Acquiring Greenland outright would significantly expand America's Arctic claim, bolstering its influence over the region. But there is certainly more to U.S. interest in Greenland than just security concerns. Economically, Greenland heavily relies on its fishing industry, which accounts for over 95% of exports, and on Denmark's annual subsidies, which cover about half of the island's public budget. In recent years, some Greenlandic politicians have considered a free association with the United States, whereby they would swap Danish subsidies for American support while maintaining the autonomy similar to arrangements with the Marshall Islands, Micronesia, and Palau. Donald Trump's aggressive stance has disrupted those discussions. About 80% of Greenland is covered with ice, some of it a mile thick. As global warming accelerates Arctic ice melting, the region has become a hotbed of international competition, with the United States vying against rivals for control over its untapped mineral resources and emerging shipping routes. As the ice continues to recede, ironically due to pollution from major emitters like the United States, Greenland's minerals and rare earth metals are becoming even more enticing. A White House official recently stated that Greenland's rare earth minerals, a collection of 25 critical new materials essential for industries ranging from smartphones to weapon systems, are sufficient to power the U.S. economy for the next generation.
bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, protesters throughout the U.S. and Europe have voiced their strong opposition to just about every move that Donald Trump has made since assuming the Oval Office for his second term as U.S. president. Now, in the U.S., demonstrators push back at the Trump administration's moves to fire thousands of federal workers, close Social Security Administration field offices, effectively shutter entire agencies, deport immigrants, scale back protections for people of color, and cut federal funding for health programs. And throughout the world, and especially Europe, protesters are in the streets taking part in hundreds of demonstrations dubbed the hands-off movement. Hands-off the UK, hands-off Gaza, hands-off Ukraine, and etc. And all this adds to protesters' concerns of looming global recession resulting from Donald Trump's aggressive global tariffs regime. And we'll discuss these anti-Trump rallies in your Spotlight program. And now for this package.
But every point in tariffs is worth more.
President Donald Trump's second term has been marked by bold and controversial moves, from imposing tariffs on nearly all foreign trading partners, which he hails as an economic revolution, to intensifying deportation efforts that have sparked both praise and outrage. Trump's agenda has reshaped the nation's social and economic landscape. While some applaud these measures as necessary steps to protect American jobs and security, critics warn of rising consumer prices, economic uncertainty, and the human cost of aggressive immigration policies. The fallout has been global. On Saturday, protests erupted across the world, reaching a fever pitch. In Washington, D.C., tens of thousands gathered, joined by demonstrators in cities from New York to Los Angeles, and even as far as Paris and Berlin.
I think it's important to speak up. I think silence is not an option. I think you have to stay engaged. You have to stay vigilant. I think it's not only for our community at large, but the world at large. I think that enough is enough.
The hands-off rallies, organized by over 150 groups, voiced opposition to government downsizing, trade policies, and what many see as an erosion of civil liberties. The message was clear. Resistance to Trump's policies is mounting, and the world is watching. Many remarks focus on the role played in Trump's administration by wealthy donors, most notably Elon Musk, who has served as an advisor to the president and has been playing a key role in government downsizing.
They would have our people believe that the reasons we can't afford rent, the reason we can't afford health care, the reason we can't afford groceries is because of other people in our own communities. Yes, we know that this system is rigged and the status quo doesn't work for Americans, but it's not rigged against the billionaires, it's rigged for the billionaires and for the corporations.
Adding to the tension, recent polls show approval ratings for President Trump slightly slipping. As the dust settles on a night of unprecedented demonstrations, one question looms large. What lies ahead for Trump's presidency? Will the anger towards his policies subside, or will they ignite further division and unrest? Only time will tell.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And now for our guests. Joining us is Mr. John Stepling, author and commentator out of Inderøy, Norway. And Mr. Daniel Patrick Welch, political commentator, joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the broadcast here. Thank you for your patience while you ran that report for our viewers. John, I guess we'll start with you in Inderøy, Norway. Good to have you, bud. Your initial thoughts on why do you think the world is mobilizing the way we're witnessing against the Trump administration?
I think that this is what happens when 40 years ago you pulled the plug on public education. And you have an extraordinarily misinformed and politically ignorant population. Not to say that Trump doesn't warrant protest, but of course so did Joe Biden and so did Obama and so did every president back to Reagan, certainly. And I think that part of this is this is liberal America wringing their hands in outrage at things that they perceive as dangerous. I saw no protest signs about the bombing of civilians in Yemen, for example, not one. Very little protest about Israeli policy and the abetting and support for a genocide in Gaza. I'm not seeing any protests about that. In fact, I saw signs at some protests, hands off NATO. You despair at the kind of hopeless stupidity of much of this. But this is the U.S., which has been in sharp decline for at least a decade, longer than that. The transference of wealth to the top 1% happened under Obama. The living conditions, the quality of life has continued to deteriorate over the last 20 years, and really much longer than that. But certainly, I think you can say since Reagan, we have seen a steady decline in job security, quality of life. We've seen a mental health crisis, a crisis of obesity. People are miserable and unhappy, and they also take offense at Trump's style. And there's been a lot of, and understandably so. He talks like a mafia don, and he is insulting to people, and he's crude and vulgar and obviously uneducated, and he has this team of techno bot guys who are equally offensive, I think, to the general public. J.D. Vance has a really questionable bedside manner, I have to say, and so people are offended, but they're getting desperate. And it almost wouldn't matter who was president. If it was Kamala Harris, people would be just as desperate because the system is failing. And that's the message here. It's really failing. And the infrastructure is crumbling. And there are no answers. And there are no jobs. And there's no hope for anybody right now. That's the overriding reality.
Thank you there. And Daniel, thanks for your patience there. Welcome to our Spotlight program there, pal. Daniel, many people in London are holding up signs, no to MAGA hate, dump Trump, resist the tyrant, save democracy. What do you think about Donald Trump and his policies getting people motivated to this level of mobilization? Or to John's point, do you feel he's just been the scapegoat for a declining living standard over a generation now in America and abroad?
I can't, the hair raises on the back of my neck at labeling Trump a scapegoat of anything. So I was bummed that John got to go first. I love John, I admire, he's a great writer. But I figured he'd steal all my lines. Yeah, I am a veteran of these marches. I've been doing it since I was five, going to to counter an anti-busing march in South Boston in 1970. You know, it is important for people to be on the streets. But John is absolutely right. They're angry. They would be angry if Kamala, Carmel, whatever, was president, but they wouldn't be in the streets because it wouldn't be organized by the party out of power. This looks to me depressingly and sadly like a color revolution, what the CIA has organized in country after country for the last 80 years, all having signs in the same fonts, although they don't need this because, you know, Bernays has taught them to meld people's minds in such a way that they come up with these self-thought things like the picture of Putin's puppets, Musk, Trump, and Vance, right? I mean, this is stupidity gone off the rails. And what do they want? They, meaning the billionaire class's puppets who set this up, the other faction of the oligarchy. This is not, you know, billionaires shouldn't be running our government, but they have been forever. And this is just different billionaires. And so now what they're trying to get is back in power without changing anything serious. Get back the reins of power. That's what this is about. That's why you see hands off Ukraine. I mean, we're talking about World War III. We're talking about arming Diego Rivera, Diego Garcia to the teeth so that the Americans can attack Iran. Like, there's crazy stuff going on that's a continuity of long-held American foreign policy that threatens actually the world, not just people on Social Security in the United States. It's and these are completely ignored. I agree completely. No signs that I didn't roll my eyes at, quite frankly.
And you know what? I feel like we're going to get off on a tangent, but because it's a good tangent, it's pretty credible where you guys are taking this conversation. I'm going to stick with this. John, I want you to elaborate on what Daniel said about a color revolution organized type of thing by the intelligence we've seen over the decades, because this is a good point that we should probably dwell into. The fact that the Democratic Party is the one pushing this hands-off movement, and 1,200 demonstration sites over 50 U.S. states, and now they've obviously exported these to Europe and elsewhere. And it's so funny when we get into it, because all the Democratic pushback when Trump was in his first term, when Biden got in, and you guys both of you very well remember, he changed nothing. Not when it came to immigration, to everything the Democrats, especially Biden, lambasted Trump about and said that it's beyond inhumane. It's beyond. I mean, he used every word to demonize Trump and his policies. And guess what he did? Well, all we saw was nothing more than continuity. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, well, American foreign policy never changes. And your other guest is right. And I'm a big fan of him as well, actually. There were no signs that I didn't roll my eyes at. I mean, just idiots that Trump was a communist agent, a Putin stooge, that, you know, he was somehow bringing world communism to America. This is just, it is mind-numbingly stupid stuff, and you do wonder about it. I don't want to think my fellow Americans have sunk into this level of ignorance, but I fear they have. Is this a psyop of some sort? Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. There's always agent provocateurs. There's always, when it's organized at this level, one does start to question things. And look, Biden was the worst president in history, and there were no protests. Biden gave his son a pardon after obvious criminal misconduct of a pretty serious kind. He's just pardoned. We had COVID under Biden. We had all kinds of foreign policy crimes under Biden. His treatment of Israel was very much the same. The foreign policy rhetoric was the same. It's the same defense contractors in office and in that revolving door at the Pentagon, CIA, State Department. It's all the same people. What what Trump brings out is a certain outrage because people dislike his style. Mm. I really think that a lot of it is he's just offensive to the sensibilities of people. But also, we have reached a point where the standards of living in the U.S. have deteriorated hugely. There's no work. There's no optimism about a future in which there will be work. And, you know, you have people like Elon Musk talking about universal basic income and, you know, colonies on Mars and stuff. Yeah, I get that it starts to become disturbing because it's cloud cuckoo land. And the reality, however, is when you have people supporting American imperialism and all these protests continue to, you know, defend American imperialism, the wars in Gaza, 20 years in Afghanistan, on and on and on and on, 900 military bases around the world, and now Netanyahu is going to visit to push for a war against Iran. This never changes. So why are these people out on the streets right now? Maybe it's just economic. They fear the coming depression. But it feels a little suspicious. I agree with your other guest to that degree. The level of organization is surprising, let's say.
And the contradictions we see in Donald Trump, the character, Daniel, he's pushing himself off as this anti-war guy, yet he continues to fuel Israel's genocide in Gaza. He was actually a big part of the fact that the ceasefire in Gaza broke down, and hinting, using force against Iran, against Panama, Greenland, against Mexico for all the fentanyl coming into the States. Is this self-proclaimed anti-war Donald Trump who he is, or is he just part of what he refers to himself as the deep state, but he doesn't realize it?
Well, I hate the term deep state because it's just the state. That's what it is. It's the state. It's the system. It's the ruling class. You know, Marx said, it's like there's an old meme of the Illuminati, and it says, "You mean ruling class, bro?" There's a picture of Marx with a glass of wine or something. I don't know. The thing is that, yes, he represents the billionaire class. There's no question about that. The thing about being an anti-war person is absurd and ridiculous. You can't say that. All that he ever actually said himself was that these wars were a waste of money and they were the wrong thing to do. I mean, he's very clearly looking to save money in Ukraine, to spend money to fight China on Taiwan and Iran and Yemen and so on. So it is true that what John said again about style. This is a projection. He's a con man. He's a hustler. That's who he's always been. Real estate, like a slumlord trying to make deals. You know, that's not that doesn't have any depth to it. And that's the whole thing, is that you can't attack Trump the person. Not that I care about the guy, but it doesn't rise to the level of mass protest. People should be voicing their actual concerns, not stylistic ones. Because I can agree with both. I know a lot of people. You run into someone in the pub who says, I like Trump. He pisses off the wrong people. I mean, the right people, sorry. He pisses off all the right people. That's what, you know, that's a style thing. They like that kind of style. Then the liberals who say he's gross and he's ew and he's this. Plus, he's just so offensive to everyone with a human heart. But, again, style over substance has become the only metric by which Americans can value candidates and policies, and they ignore the facts, which are U.S. hegemony is going on continuously and is in real trouble. I won't doubt that the things against Trump in Europe and elsewhere are things against U.S. policy for two generations, and they should continue. And they are becoming successful in some ways, but not in the American political voting public.
Right.
At all.
And,
And John, if I could really, quickly get your take on this whole, the tariffs regime by Donald Trump, it seems to be irking everyone from New York to London. Tariffs on everyone, baseline of 10%, like a gratuity charge at a restaurant for practically everyone that you're trading with, additional tariff regimes ranging from 10 to 30% from China to Mexico, from Canada, you very well know, to your American so-called, pardon, your European so-called allies there. So it's shocking. Every single market index, at least 5% were shaken over the last couple of days. A lot of economists say that a global recession is imminent. How do you see Trump's tariff, global tariff war here, John? And is it going to benefit, ultimately, the American consumer? I guess that's the big thing he's emphasizing, he's trying to do.
Ultimately, the American working class will suffer the most from this. And he doesn't care about that. The idea that somehow Trump is stumbling blindly and clumsily into a global depression is nonsense. That's what they want. Ever since COVID, there has been this kind of restructuring, global economic restructuring, a kind of contraction of capital. This will end up hurting the working class. They will be disciplined further. They will be subjected to further controls and restrictions in how they lead their lives. These marches are not about the things that they really should be about, obviously. And all the way back to Reagan, you know, destroyed unions and crushed American labor. And that's really happening again. It may make Trump unpopular for a while, but he doesn't care because, you know, this is electoral theater in a way. The people who really run the country allow this theater to take place, and everybody gets up in arms about it and clutches their pearls and takes place in marches like this. But America people should be concerned with the imperialist wars and global destruction that the U.S. Now Israel, but the targeting of China, Russia, Iran, these are crazy imperialist adventures that the U.S. is less and less capable of prosecuting. The era of U.S. power, hegemonic power, is over, and so there is an undercurrent of desperation in all of this as well from the government side.
All right, we're just about out of time. Daniel, I wanted to give you more time. We have about a little less than a minute left. Trump's also, a lot of these protests are also pushing back on Donald Trump's cabinet appointments from Elon Musk to anti-vax Robert F. Kennedy to handle health and human services to Tulsi Gabbard running national intelligence services to Cash Patel heading the FBI. Good or bad for America, or to your earlier point, is he just doing this to tick people off?
He just doing this to concentrate his power and justify the election, winning the election. Again, that's the scam just to win the election. What he's doing is what billionaires always do. Billionaires want to make more money for themselves. That's what the trade war is about, reshaping, pulling up the drawbridges so that America can be more of an autarky to get ready for this contraction. And they're late to the game. They are scared, and that despair is visible from below, and people are latching onto it for the wrong reasons.
Great talk, gentlemen. Appreciate having you both on. Stay safe to the both of you there. Don Stepling joining us there out of Inderøy, Norway, and also Daniel Patrick Welch joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. And this brings us to end your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering a doubts and questions. And questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs with me, Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani from the Islamic House of Qom is the special guest speaker for today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Today's question asks Sheikh, why dog is considered impure in the religion of Islam? What is the main reason and philosophy behind the impurity of the dog?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, one point that I should mention here prior to delving into the main topic, that is this, that sometimes when something is considered impure and najis from the Sharia law perspective, that might not be considered as dirt or as a dirty thing normally by the people.
You mean unclean? Impurity unclean, is different,
yeah,
from
yeah,
unclean.
It's different, yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
For example, dust is something that normally people might consider it as something unclean or, let's say, something like dirty.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when your clothes is full of, for example, dust and clay, for example, you try to wash it, remove it, because you consider it as something unclean, or as you consider that your shirt as dirty shirt. But when you want to say the prayer, and Sharia, Islam says that there's no problem with that. You can say your prayer with that. You can perform salat while, for example, your shirt is, for example, muddy or with full of dust, for example,
that's
these
right.
sort of things.
That's right.
So then impurity is religious impurity or Sharia impurity, Shara'i impurity is something. Dirtiness or uncleanliness is something else.
All right.
That should be clarified. For example, when there is a drop of blood, if it, for example, falls into a cold water, yeah,
yes,
it becomes najis.
Yes.
But if the amount of water is more than cold water, then it becomes not najis.
Mm-hmm.
So while this is like kind of Sharia law that makes it najis and the other one najis, but according to the people, might the first one would not be dirty, not be unclean normally.
Okay.
So it depends on the thing that we have to know, that Sharia is something.
Mm-hmm.
Non-Sharia kind of cleanliness or uncleanliness is something else. This
That's
is
fine.
The first.
Okay.
Then when it comes to najasa or the dirt, let's say the impurity of the dog,
yes,
same question may arise here, that when it is said that it is unclean or it is impure or it is najis, does it mean that that natural kind of uncleanness, natural kind of dirtiness, or is something else?
Yes.
Sometimes, for example, people might think that, okay, I, for example, washed completely my dog with different shampoos. I don't know, very, very, now my dog is very much clean and very much, you know.
Now, Sheikh, you cannot believe that these pet shops all across the world, the dog section, really, really rich
in
terms of shampoos or soaps or, I don't know, cleaning materials. That's right. Okay.
Yeah. So then they would say that, okay, now my dog is